now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I'm going to give an estimate of the situation. I'll describe what that means, drawing on historical examples. Talk about the manifestation of, well, I've predicted this for some time now, of all these military experts over the last several years. Much is being made out of the infrared and gun camera footage from the Navy fighter planes. Lorenzo from the Threat Assessment Group within the Pentagon has been getting a lot of publicity lately. 60 Minutes recently ran a piece on him talking about some of these experiences. And I do find the naval aviation encounter off the coast of Southern California, that's a great case by any standards for a number of reasons. But this threat assessment group that Lorenzo came from must be looked at in context, because there were other, I guess you would call them similar groups within the armed forces, especially the Air Force, that had this kind of investigative role into studying UFO reports. Some were real earnest outfits that were still out of the loop, even though they were within the Air Force intelligence structure. Other intelligence outfits within the Air Force were very biased against the reality of UFOs, especially the extraterrestrial hypothesis, and there's a reason for this. Definitely goes back to Roswell, definitely goes back to the estimate of the situation from 1948, which I will talk about. So we must regard this new information, or I do anyway, but not we. We must do this, or we must do that. This is what I think. This large influx of information coming from the military, especially the Navy, to me, that is yet another reason why this scientific establishment, bought and paid for, should be taken seriously. They're wrong about everything. And so when you can point to countless studies, countless news articles from supposedly scientific-type organizations, and they're all dismissing and all rubbishing the whole concept of aliens and UFOs and flying saucers, etc., etc., etc. They've been doing that for decades. Now suddenly the military is saying, oh, look at these cool videos we've got, right? And the only thing that makes them unique is that they're military videos. I don't ascribe to this notion that just because the military comes up with a UFO video, of necessity, it's better than anything a civilian can come up with. And the inference being that if a civilian came up with it, as an alleged UFO investigator, Nick Pope says, a Joe Sixpack, a civilian, a non-military person, makes a UFO report, that person is automatically regarded as a crackpot. That's why Nick Pope calls them Joe Sixpacks, okay? But suddenly, if a military video pops up, woo, woo, I got shivers down my spine. Automatically supersedes all this evidence, eyewitness testimony, personal testimony, video, still photography, evidence that's been streaming in or confiscated from civilians for a long time. So, and these threat assessment types, and now there's an official Pentagon organization that supposedly looks into UFOs now. Threat assessment apparently folded some time ago through, I guess, disdainful interest or lack thereof from the higher-ups, or it was there just as a front to begin with. Because no matter how compelling video evidence is, whether it's from the military or not, and you could have scores of these as proof, it still doesn't get you to the heart of the matter. Nowhere near the level of understanding in a alien abductee or a MyLab, for example, or especially those MyLabs that involved or have been involved in hardcore ET tech military ops on and off world. That's an entirely different league that these military types on the surface just have no conception of. So I look at it in that context, and I look at, you know, who amongst this new group of sudden UFO experts have already revealed themselves as being either a piss-poor investigator or an outright fraud. This one guy, I think I talked about this before, he set himself up to be an expert because he was involved with getting some of the information out that had come from the carrier task group, the Nimitz naval aviation encounters with UFOs. And also there's been a lot of discussion of East Coast, off the U.S. East Coast, UFO activity that, according to this naval aviator who was featured in the recent 60 Minutes show I talked about, he said it's pretty standard. Just about every day, military pilots run into UFOs. And that's the case in a lot of places, not just off the East Coast. But, you know, we also can't put the cart before the horse. If there's a crescendo of ET activity, right, which you can go back in history, whenever there was a crescendo of ET, UFO activity, wonders in the sky, etc., etc., it usually led to something pretty big, some kind of epical change here on the surface. Empires come, empires go. Just how much did ET, subterranean types, interdimensionals have to do with that, right? A lot, if one goes back and studies these ancient warrior-type empires. So we're already seeing this effort to create essentially what they call an influence operation, kind of shift the focus towards these military or ex-military types. And if you look at the Threat Assessment Center, by their own admission, I mean, they were pretty much out of the loop. But also, now that they're civilians, one could argue they're trying to get, for whatever reason, they don't want to blow people out of the water, one could argue, by coming out with information that's too hardcore. I don't really think that's going on. I think there are limits to what they're allowed to reveal. Because video evidence of UFOs, no matter how compelling, whether they're from the military or not, it's routinely rubbished if it's civilian, right? A civilian can come out with the most fantastic UFO footage, close range. It'll just be rubbished or debunked, or something will happen to the original video, etc., etc. My question is what has come out, like on the featured on the 60 Minutes segment, for example, is that the best they got? Is that their most compelling evidence? Is that all they've got, right? I've spoken to retired Air Force pilots in the early 1950s. They were trained to intercept UFOs and photo document, get gun camera footage of the intercept. Okay, I've talked about that. Guy Kirkwood, I knew him very well. That was 1954 when they were intercepting flights, squadrons, it seemed, of UFOs at times, and engaging in a mock dogfight, flying in formation, four F-86 Sabres, and all bearing on the same, ideally the same target or targets when they're shooting the gun camera film. Okay, that was like circa 53, 54, okay? So, you know, just coming out with all this stuff now about what's showing up in infrared and woo-woo, the UFO dips under the ocean and disappears, that bit even showed up in the Tucker Carlson show, right? Well, look what part of the world it happened in off the Southern California coast. I mean, the stories the locals will tell you about places like Redondo Beach. There's this abandoned SeaWorld there, and somewhere there off the ocean shelf, underwater and underground, is a base. Whether it's just a U.S., military scientific base, or an ET base, or a joint base, we don't know, but there's a base there, and I have spoken to people who've you know, somehow run afoul of the deep black elements of that that base, or that protect that base. Because one of the cases I'm thinking about in particular is just somehow the civilian surface world authorities got involved in harassing people that have, you know, strayed too close to that beach area, right? So when they talk about in the Tucker Carlson show, oh, look at this craft dipping into the ocean and it disappears, it's like, well, it's Southern California, a major hotspot. One of my colleagues at work, I've told this story before, he was driving from San Diego to Long Beach, if memory serves, and it was around, well, you know, anyone who's done that run within the last 20 years or so knows how long that would take. But he was there driving, and when he was close to the ocean, the stretches of drive when he was close to the ocean, he was seeing a tremendous amount of UFO activity offshore. And he said that there were naval aviation assets and naval vessels were out, and like in force, right? And he said this was for large stretches of his drive from San Diego up Highway 5 and headed into Long Beach. I've said before, I've seen jet chases in my neighborhood when I lived in San Diego and used to work at Naval Air Station North Island. And I've been woken up out of a sound sleep with my whole flat shaking because, you know, jets were conducting air combat maneuvering in my neighborhood chasing after UFOs. There was that big Bay Park incident in San Diego, off San Diego, when a beam of light came out of the ocean. Eyewitness told me the beam of light was a mile wide, went straight up, lit up the clouds, caused a major blackout. Dozens of people called the Jeff and Jerry show the next morning talking about, you know, the bright light, the blackout, subsequent blackout. Light night turned into day, UFOs flying all over the place. There have been other such cases. So, does it come as any surprise to me that the military should keep running into UFOs and alien activity out there? No, not any more unusual than there's that so-called, I forget the cover name for it, experimental station, whatever, but it's in naval intelligence gathering facility in the Bahamas, and their job basically is UFO, USO, monitoring, surveillance. Could be some collaboration at some level, right? That's happening off the Bahamas, and then the naval aviator talked about the ET UFO activity that would be seen offshore of the, you know, in the East Coast by military pilots, right? And what came out in that, as a result of that 60 Minutes segment, it wasn't said outright, but it was implied that was that the consensus amongst many presumably active duty pilots, naval aviators, and other people in the naval aviation world, they don't believe that it's man-made, whether it's U.S. man-made, Russian, Chinese. They're talking, hinting, whispering, supposedly, about how they think it's otherworldly. It's basically alien, non-human. Now, getting back to the estimate of the situation. Oh, and another case that happened in San Diego before I continue about the estimate of the situation. There was a case investigated by a friend of mine who, at the time, was the director of the San Diego UFO Society. In fact, he wound up on a local TV news segment talking about this case I'm about to relate, and I think I talked about it before on the Cosmic Switchboard and or the commentaries. It was either light plane, yeah, it was light plane footage of what seemed to be a glowing, luminescent saucer-shaped object in the water, spinning around, creating a huge whirlpool around it. And you can see just beyond the outer ring or outer rings of the whirlpool that was being created, there seemed to be some kind of naval vessel. And there was helicopter activity too, that locals had reported. And my friend went on local TV and talked about it and said, in his opinion, that's a UFO / USO. And that was right there off the coast of San Diego somewhere again. There's a lot of activity inland, in the direction headed towards the Imperial Valley, but not even having to go quite that far. So California, Southern California in particular, is a hotbed, and I've been there many years, conducted many investigations, debriefed many people. So no surprise that these naval people are talking about activity, UFO, alien activity off the Southern California coast. Getting back to the estimate of the situation. The 1948 estimate of the situation was intended only for internal Air Force review from the highest levels of the Air Force. And by contrast, this threat assessment group, they somehow acquired a budget of $22 million, which probably wouldn't pay for a new paint job for a F-35. Right? Talk about a Mickey Mouse budget. And they've come out with a couple of good videos so far, but it's my question is, how far are they willing to go? Do they think there's any relevance in the fact that Congressman Stephen Schiff, who kept pushing the General Accounting Office because he was a representative congressman from New Mexico, and his constituents kept bugging him and harassing him about Roswell, right, as they should have been doing, and they did. And Stephen Schiff, unusual for a congressman, had integrity and was accountable, and he made a nuisance of himself. And when the Air Force tried to, brush him off and blow him off, basically say that he wasn't clear for the information, he really blew his top. Eventually, Stephen Schiff died of a quick-acting aggressive cancer, right? The kind that the CIA and other black ops outfits, have used many times in the past. So, does this threat assessment group, or the former members of the threat assessment group, do you think there's any relevance to that? Do you think that should be something followed up? How about the threats to Sheriff George Wilcox's entire family, including his grandchildren? They were told by the Army MPs, Army Air Force MPs, his entire family, three generations, would be wiped out if he breathed a word about anything he saw at Roswell. And it's strongly suspected Sheriff George Wilcox saw at least some of the bodies. I doubt these threat assessment guys will go in that direction, because like I said, they probably have their limits, and the scientific community has proven itself to be fraudulent again. There's all this rubbishing and debunking all these years, and now, ironically, the military says, oh yeah, they're here, they're real. But they're acting like it's a new thing. It's not a new thing. Okay? Within Air Material Command, starting July 1948, thereabouts, there is an intelligence office that worked in the technical branch of Air Material Command, one of the technical branches. And General Nathan Twining was commander of Air Material Command at the time. He was there in Roswell in Alamogordo Field. So this intelligence office within Air Material Command, if memory serves, writes up an estimate of the situation. And the term estimate of the situation is a time-honored intelligence summary update of what their intelligence analysis, basically how they view a particular problem, what their analysts, what their investigations of all the evidence, all the documentation, it's everything. What conclusions have they drawn from all these, right? That's what an estimate of the situation is, whether it's an enemy, potential enemy, potential crisis, whatever the case may be. This particular Air Force Intelligence Office just happened to write an estimate of the situation about the aliens and flying saucers and UFOs. They came out with it in September 1948. It was sent up the chain of command and was batted back down. And they were ordered, the office that wrote this estimate of the situation was ordered to destroy all their copies of the report. And the conclusion of this Air Force intelligence branch, after highlighting like well over a dozen high credibility, high strangeness type cases, their conclusion was that the craft were interplanetary, and basically the extraterrestrial hypothesis. Now, the brass in the Air Force, they already knew this, right? The aforementioned Twining, for example. And they had set it up so that there would be other branches of Air Force intelligence within the technical branches, the engineering branches, intelligence collection, wherever they could be set up, that some of these Air Force intelligence offices would have an anti-UFO flying saucer, especially extraterrestrial hypothesis perspective, right? So the chief of staff ordered all the copies of that report destroyed, estimated the situation, where they included that the flying saucers and craft were being reported were extraterrestrial in origin. Now, according to retired Captain Edward Rappel, who wrote his great Project Blue Book account of his time in Project Blue Book, he said it went all the way up to General Hoyt Vandenberg, an MJ-12er, consummate insider in the intelligence world, even before he became Chief of Staff of the Air Force. And according to Rappelt, Vandenberg said something to the effect of, are you trying to start a stampede by coming up with this conclusion that the flying saucers are, you know, alien, extraterrestrial, interplanetary? So, you know, I guess Vandenberg was at least giving the impression he didn't want to create a public panic by something like that getting out. And to this day, the Air Force denies ever coming up with an estimate of the situation, but they did, right? So that's 1948, when a branch within the Air Force, not having access to any of the Roswell material, right? That shows how compartmented it is, folks, right? Air Material Command houses the very departments that have the hardware, the alien technology, T2 technical intelligence, T3 engineering, power plants, propulsion. At Wright Field, later Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the Foreign Technology Division, all that stuff, all those agencies come under Air Material Command, and it was all compartmentalized. So even an intelligence agency within Air Material Command doesn't have a need to know, does not. They're deprived of all the Roswell and other saucer crash intel, like the Aztec crash, March 1948. For example, and the Cape Girardeau 1941, April 1941 crash, right? Systematically denied from all of that. They could only go by sighting reports, and they didn't have the woo-woo video and the FLIR, the infrared video that we see today that they, you know, keep running out there to us, right? Through the lamestream media. So,
how does this have relevance to what's going on today? Well, I'm giving my estimate of the situation. And it's fashionable, once again, because of mind control and because of mental limitations, that all this is gearing up for a fake alien invasion. And I've said many times, that's like putting the cart before the horse.
William Bramley, in his classic book, Gods of Eden, had talked about middle-aged chroniclers talking about these funny-looking humanoids that were spraying out of their craft, spraying the skies with some kind of mist, and then lo and behold, shortly thereafter, you know, Black Death, bubonic plague breaks out. And there were also medieval accounts of men with weird tank-looking things on their backs in the wheat fields and crop fields spraying something that came out of those tanks, right? And then, likewise, those areas the people exposed through ingested that food, those crops, they wound up coming down with some kind of a contagion, right? Some kind of a plague or something. So, if we stick to, see, all these videos are like the New Age version, the latest iteration, the latest version of the lights in the sky. Ooh, look at these military videos, right, of craft. When I know so many people that have been ex-military and were exposed to a UFO ET incident in the military. So there's nothing unusual about it, but they want to control the narrative. They don't want it delving off into areas like deep underground bases and off-world operations and bases on Mars and ET bases on the moon and alien abductions and nuclear missile silos being deactivated, right, by intruding alien craft. No, that's because those are some of the first cases, right, they should have brought up. They shouldn't have just focused on the videos. They should be laying out the whole background of all this stuff that's happened. They've been a national security threat from the get-go. But when people say, well, this is all gearing up for a fake alien invasion, when I look at what's going on with the depopulation agenda going on, this is not a human operation. This is an alien operation. It's global. And it's full-spectrum dominance. AI, technology, black magic. It's like they're throwing everything but the kitchen sink. And the reports, the horrific reports we're seeing is out of the worst science fiction. The worst B-movie science fiction you can imagine, like The Blob with Steve McQueen. I mean, we're hearing about women in their 60s, well past menopause, coming down with menstruation again, heavy bleeding, heavy clotting. We're hearing about young girls and infant girls and toddler girls coming down with blood clotting and menstruation. Whatever the hell this spike protein is, it's some kind of... I mean, you magnify that, those suckers, there'd be some kind of creature looking back at you or something, I don't know. But it's intelligently controlled. And when people say, oh, you know, they try to debunk these recently vaccinated people putting magnets on their arms, right, where the injection points are, the entry points for the vax. Well, you know, they've been showing videos, you know, placing magnets over the injection spots and they're sticking, right? So there's some kind of magnetic field there. And we said in the commentaries and the interviews and the discussions we've had at Nish and Judith Kuoba and others, we've said that with the nanotech capability, the AI nanotech capability they have, and the fact that we already know that DNA is a transceiver, a sender and receiver of information, and the fact that these nanobots can be programmed to go to any part of the body, any major organ, wherever, or just flood and infiltrate the whole body and differentiate that, you know, certain bots do muck with certain, you know, parts of the anatomy, nervous system, endocrinary system, whatever, right? I mean, if you want to get an idea of what I'm talking about, watch the classic Stargate Atlantis episode when the commander of the base, she gets captured by the replicators and they stick this AI bot serum inside of her, which basically takes her over from the inside, right? It's, we're talking that level of tech where not only do the bots differentiate and go to specific parts of the body, specific organs, to conduct specific operations, but as in the case with DNA being a sender and receiver of information, these AI bots, these nanobots, within our bloodstream, within people's bloodstreams and cells and body, they begin sending information back. Oh, this person's Rh neg, this person's O positive, this person has this kind of genetic ancestry, right? I mean, that's how specific it can be. And we start getting in the direction of discussion of prions and the connection it has. And we talked about this on the show a long time ago, too. The spongiform issue, which creates mad cow disease, prions, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but the potential exists. Not only are the recently treated, let's say, churning out, spewing out these spike proteins, and there are scientific medical abstracts and journals and papers written warning about spike proteins. And then you put in the AI overlay and the fact that, in all likelihood, in my view, the nanobots are sending information back about every single person who not only has been injected, but who potentially gets infected by the spike protein, which is the vector, which is what, you know, it's not about like germs and, you know, viruses and exosomes. It's very, you know, it's very prosaic. It's very, from the AI standpoint, you know, keep it simple, stupid, right? I love it when the knucklehead debunkers try to invoke Occam's razor. Oh, Occam's razor states that aliens can't possibly be here because the distances between star systems are too vast. You know, this same knuckleheaded kind of line we've heard for a long time. Well, the real Occam's razors statement should be, Occam's razor states that there must be many alien races and civilizations here because they've existed far longer than we have, and they have, you know, knowledge and raw material in their star systems, which we don't have, right? We, you know, that are naturally occurring, the kind of materials to be found in some of these multiple star systems. It's, I mean, like in Stargate SG-1, they're always looking for Naquita, right? The material that makes up the Stargate. Like, it's an essential building block of that particular ET race in the TV show, right? Stargate SG-1. The ancients, and then the gold came later. So, keep in mind that these lights in the sky / Navy type videos, no matter how high tech, no matter how clear, no matter how unequivocal, is still an arm's length lights in the sky version of what they've been doing for years. And now they're creating, and I've said this all along too, they're creating a new priesthood of ex-military types, or people with woo-woo intelligence backgrounds, when the truth is much stranger than fiction. Because if we look at the UFO program from a lights in the sky / cool video perspective, they're missing everything. That's like the magician's trick of, you know, look at what I'm doing with this hand, but what's really going on is what I'm doing with the other hand. Because I was just talking about the spike proteins and then the nanotech sending back information, and it would send back information back to the quantum cloud mainframe or the beast or whatever the hell it is, right? And then automatically this beast computer system would then send a command, okay, that kind of blood type, that kind of DNA profile, that kind of ET, you know, so-called junk DNA, which they identify as certain ET groups, right? This is what we want you nanobots to do inside that person, right? Turn them into a zombie, you know, whatever the case may be. Simply kill them, destroy their cognitive function. But it's not just a case of these people just wasting away. All this DNA material, all this stuff is not only being passed around contagiously, like an AI pathogen, but the very chi, the very life force is being siphoned out of these people. And many of them are left with like a replacement personality. It's their cognitive function, their personality they used to have pre-treatment. It's like they're entirely different, slower functioning person now, right? All the while they're churning out these spike proteins. I mean, this is like the plot from the worst grade B science fiction movie you can imagine, but it's really happening. And so this, to me, is, even if I didn't know what I did about aliens, UFOs, underground bases, my labs, etc., etc., if I knew nothing about that, just based on the attack profile against the human race, they're coming at us from all these different directions, the chemtrails, the pesticides, the heavy metals. Oh, people, you know, they would never do that. They would never inject something into somebody, and then you could put a magnet on the injection site and it'll stick. My goodness. They put plutonium-239 into oatmeal and gave it to children as part of these evil radiation experiments they did back in the day. A lot of this came out during the Clinton administration. Hazel O'Leary was the Department of Energy secretary at the time, and she allowed this information to come out for whatever reason. But so they were feeding like radioactive oatmeal to children. Right, I can't remember exactly if they're mentally, challenged children or what they called mentally retarded back then or whatever. It was just children, basically children. Now, if they'll do that way back when, it's like, what do you mean they won't shoot nanotechs into people, and then you know the point of injection becomes magnetic? What's so hard to believe about that when they gave kids radioactive oatmeal decades ago, right? And plutonium is a heavy metal, right? So when you're talking about like AI nanobots swimming around the bloodstream, it's like, yeah, but they came out with plutonium-239 friggin' early 1940s, right? That's how much this agenda has advanced over time. And then, yeah, they feed it to children. How evil is that? So if they'll do that, the sky's the limit. There's no limit to the depths they will plumb as far as evil is concerned, right? So even if I didn't know what I did about aliens, UFOs, everything else, just the attack profile tells me it's non-human in origin. So when these people say, "Oh, Project Bluebeam," you can see it's coming. Project Bluebeam. What's that? The attack profile, clearly to me, is alien in nature, and it's depopulation, and it's changing the human genome, and there's implications for the human soul. I mean, across so many levels, that's non-human that's behind that. Absolutely non-human. And just as we've seen with 9/11 drills, they train, you know, for certain scenarios, or they conduct all these drills, and suddenly the drills go live, right? We've seen this at 9/11. We've seen this with the 777 bombings in London, right? Where on the exact same day, the exact same hour, exact same minute, practically, when they were conducting a live exercise drill of simulating a number of terrorist bombs going off in London, crippling the transportation hubs, well, the real thing happens, right? So that was an example of a drill going live, and we saw that happen in 9/11 too. So everyone's got, or a lot of people got, because they're too intellectually lazy to study all the available UFO information the way we have, right? So they're going around blowing smoke about Project Bluebeam. Well, who's to say that all the stuff about Project Bluebeam itself is a drill? And then when the time comes, the ETs decide, look, we've depopulated enough of these dolts. We've harvested what's left, you know, what's valuable, what's left of their DNA. Now let's just take over, openly, publicly. We're the gods again. We're going to walk the earth. We're going to fly across the skies in our chariots of the gods, right? And they can do that because they control all the information systems and AI systems and everything else. I mean, we saw decades ago what they were doing to launch control facilities for nuclear missiles. They were, you know, creating fated giant scenarios where, you know, all these missiles in their silos spread out over thousands of square miles, they would go into no-go status. They were just rendered inoperable by aliens, right? They were showing back then what they could do. That's just the tip of the iceberg. So with this mass die-off going on the surface, all these horrible effects right out of a bad science fiction movie happening to all these people, young and old alike. And the attack profile all across the board, the weather modification, all of it. That's an attack on humanity. It's not humanity attacking itself, because this hybrid plantation leadership that we've been talking about, they're just the heinous evil things they do. They're not human. Even like a cursory study of their behaviors tell you they're not human. They may look human, right? I mean, in the wild, there are like predators that look like creatures that are not so threatening, but they're still predators, right? You know, there are like eels and snapping turtles that stick their tongue out and they like wiggle it around underwater, make it look like a worm or something. And so some unsuspecting fish comes along and then whammo, right? That's the way nature is. So if we revert back to the lights in the sky woo-woo video level, we miss the point about how strange this is. And that's a hallmark of all the best cases. The best cases always have a high strangeness component. And that's how I view this multi-pronged, full-spectrum dominance-type attack. You know, literally, like, I mean, there are many of us that experience astral abductions being yanked right out of our body. Then we find ourselves in some kind of woo-woo simulation or whatever the case may be. Or it's simply, you know, not simply, but turns out to be a supernatural attack from negative interdimensional beings, demons, if you will. And just turning your astral dreamscape into this hellish, hellraiser, pinhead kind of scenario. You know what I mean? That happens to people that are demonically tormented, as they would have called it, you know, way back when. So it's important to look at this. It's important for me to look at this in this context, where this is an all-out attack on the human race. And that's my estimate of the situation. It's an attack that has implications for the soul and the consciousness. They're shooting for all the marbles. They make it to the point where they're not going to hide anymore. First, their hybrid plantation managers start shape-shifting all over the place, TV and public popping like popcorn. One moment you're standing next to somebody that pop, he turns into a friggin' reptile, right? Even Alex Jones is talking about shape-shifting reptilians a few weeks back. Mike Adams, it slips out of him. He talks about, you know, reptilians and stuff. I'm not saying they believe it. I'm saying that's how widespread it is, and that's what, I mean, Alex Jones referred to a source, like a really credible source, a really respectable person in his field, told him this. Someone shapeshifted right in front of him. There may come a point in time when these beings either don't care and are no longer interested or willing to bother with shape-shifting and holding a human form, or maybe something is happening with the energetics. The fundamental concepts are changing. Maybe something is happening and some of them can't hold their human shape as well as they did in the past. So, you know, the timetable, it seems to be speeding up. Why should they care if the human race is being killed off by their agenda? And it's a they-live scenario. It's all their TV commentators, all their TV medical people, and et cetera, Hollywood. I mean, it's all of them in this they-live type scenario, where they're all alien beings. But, you know, largely, most of them are reptilian and or Draco human hybrids. So, the estimate of the situation is an ongoing thing, because it's kind of like the way I'm looking at it now is, as we learn more, we begin to, you know, revise even our estimates and our intelligence analysis. And you know what? I love it. I love it when myself and my colleagues are proven wrong about something, right? Because it, you know, frankly, it's like we would breathe a sigh of relief. We don't want this stuff to be going on, but we can't bury our head in the sand either, right? Some of you are going to have to make tough choices. Those who've, you will have known or know people that either have been treated or will be treated for this plan, scam, mandemic, whatever the hell you want to call it, right? And are you really going to want these people around you and your family and what have you? It's that's the kind of fear it'll, and trepidation it'll instill for people that are aware that they're living in a they-live scenario, right? A they-live slash idiocracy scenario. The cognitive functioning of people have been reduced for a long time, gradually being reduced. And, you know, don't expect any help from the military. They'll do what they're told. Always have done what they're told. So, the military that we have today is nothing like the military of the past. Sure, there were reptilian hybrids and high levels in the military before, but nothing like the way it is now. So, the moral of this story is, if these former threat assessment guys or people like them, or some official military Pentagon statement comes out with something bland, generic, you know, not very revealing about aliens, UFOs, etc., etc., something that, you know, we already take for granted, well, obviously that's basically what's going to happen if they, you know, admit to ETs and aliens at all. It's not going to be any depth to it. It's not going to be like, oh yeah, they're very obvious and I'm, you know, from within the Pentagon, yeah, we're all a bunch of reptiles, right? They're not going to say that, right? So we're talking about a they-live scenario, and because there's a celestial timetable at work, the fundamental constants are changing. They have to speed up their operations because a window is closing on them, a window of time, a window of opportunity, right? And we can't forget that how this reality intertwines with alternate realities, other timelines, alternate timelines, future timelines. It's nothing is set in stone. It's everything is still in a flux state, which is good. And the hybrid plantation managers and their minions have made a lot of mistakes. A lot of mistakes. And that's a good thing. Because, you know, they really don't have higher reasoning capability. They're operating on base, primordial, guttural, you know, sadistic, moronic thug instinct, right? So, in a sense, we almost have to, you know, look past, in a way, all the evil crap that's going on. I'm not saying ignore it or dismiss it. I'm saying see past the outer layers. See what's going on with the non-human AI element. And so many surface-level only truthers have become tools of this alien demonic AI matrix, because they're spreading information and nonsense, quite frankly, which advances this AI agenda, this AI demonic evil agenda, by going around telling people, oh, it's just mad humans doing, you know, rich mad humans that are doing this. No, that's manifestly not happening. So anything to do with aliens, anything to do with fake alien invasions, anything to do with this planet, where things are like being turned against the human race and the environment and, you know, all the other life forms, and their minions are always bleating about and, you know, chirping about climate change and all this other stuff, and, you know, clearly what we're seeing is terraforming. There is terraforming going on this planet, right? To me, it's not far-fetched that there is a, you know, the gods will walk amongst, you know, the mortals again agenda, or what mortals are left, right, of the human variety. That there may come a point in time where they say, okay, we've terraformed this world enough, blocked out as much of the sun as we can, right? Now the gloves are off, we'll block out the sun properly, right, or whatever the hell they're going to do, along with just infusing the ground with aluminium and, you know, increasing the background radiation levels, etc., etc. And if they do decide to engage in a limited nuclear war, and when I say limited, I'm not saying like necessarily 2, 3, 4, or 5, like tactical nuclear exchanges. I'm talking about, you know, there could be several or, you know, more than a dozen detonations, and at some point, by mutual agreement, usually the ETs and reptilians agreeing against amongst themselves and working through their hybrid plantation manager minions, okay, we'll stop it right here. Because they may not necessarily want to blow each other up, but they may want to change the environment that much, right? Without devastating everything. There will be a large and increased population loss, of course, right? If they allow it to go nuclear, it will raise the background radiation levels. And again, that only benefits, well, it certainly doesn't benefit what's left of the human race by then, but it will benefit, potentially benefit, rather, certain races that are not, either not troubled by an increased background radiation count, or actually benefits from it in some way. So, my estimate of the situation will be revised every now and then, but, you know, in 1948, they said, with an estimate of the situation in the Air Force, that, yeah, flying saucers are interplanetary, they're extraterrestrial. Well, here in 2021, it's a full-scale assault on the human race. This, to me, is a massive full-spectrum dominance attack by non-human beings. Principally the reptilians and Draco and the Manus beings, but not only them. There's a feeding frenzy going on. Many levels of reality, many different dimensions, and a lot of the efforts from these different quarters are aimed, quite frankly, at us. Because they see this as a big resource. At a zoo, and not some scum zoo like Pakistan somewhere where the animals die of abuse and neglect, but like in a civilized place, let's say, right, where they, you know, I don't believe in animal captivity, but it's clear to me that a well-run zoo or a nature preserve species can be helped to continue, right, they can be protected, become a real protected species. And so, when I think of those animals, of all stripes around the world, you see a benevolent caretaker, right? They change the water, they clean the environment, and they give good food. They try to simulate as much as possible what their natural habitat would be like. And in captivity, some of these, many of these animals live for quite a long time, longer than they would in the wild. And the point of relevance is, the inverse of that is what's happening. The owners of this big terrarium we live in, it's they despise humans. They have a sadistic hatred and disdain for us. And this culling, they want to wipe out just about everyone, just leave a relatively small amount for their own sadistic AI zombie man-the-computer syndrome agenda, right? Just keep around enough humans, all implanted AI bots running all through them. Use them for their sadistic, sick pleasure, whatever, as well. Use them to run the machines and computers, but that's it. Wipe out all the rest and, you know, trade their consciousness around in some kind of version of AI digital currency or something, you know, Bitcoin. From like an alien version of it, right? That's what's going on at the moment. So the high strangeness, folks. It's when we recognize the high strangeness attack on us from a surface level perspective, full spectrum, right? Then we begin to adapt. Our minds begin to adapt, recognize the depth and the scale of the problem, and then even subconsciously we start coming up with solutions. You know, we're getting hit multidimensionally. It must mean, it tells a simpleton like me, that if they're hitting me multidimensionally, then it means that at some level I'm multidimensional too, right? Remember what Sun Tzu said: our greatest weaknesses are our greatest strength. Right? People write that off as some kind of, like, you know, Oriental, like, you know, obscurantism or something, right? It's not. It's an actual, meaningful message. So, anyhow, just wanted to talk about the estimated situation, bring up a few issues. If you like what we do at the Cosmic Switchboard Show, and if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up, become a member, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now. Because this is a frequency war.